Welcome to Plain Talk. Plain Talk has a new podcast every 2 weeks with up-to-date information about aviation technologies for general and business aviation. From home to cockpit to boardroom to personal tech, Plain Talk provides informative information for pilots, industry insiders, and aviation enthusiasts alike. My name is Phil Lightstone. I'm a general aviation pilot with over 1,900 hours in my logbook, flying almost every week with over 30 years' experience in the technology and aviation industries. Just want to welcome Greg Gibson, Chief Marketing Officer at Sun & Fun and the Aerospace Center for Excellence, Plain Talk. How are you, Greg?
Oh, doing well. Anxious to get this 2021 show, you know, back in the air, as it were.
Excuse the pun. I see that you've been with the organization for over 7 years.
I have. This will be my eighth event. We you know, 2020 was a little bit rough on our physical venue, but we still had a virtual version, so we're carrying right on, saying that we're going to roll into the 47th annual. So this will be my eighth event that I've been associated with, and it's been a good run.
You know, amazing, operating for 47 years, and as you said, you're into your eighth. What have been some of the challenges and some of the high points over the last 47 years or over the last eight?
Well, you know, every era presents its challenges. You know, the 70s were the 70s, so you're fighting through the oil embargoes and gas prices and a number of things there. And, aviation's restructuring, reorganization there, in the late 70s and on into the 80s was an obvious challenge for the event. But, it's always been spring break for pilots, and it remains that. Moving into, all the way, kind of our strongest years, at least financially, if you will, were over the last, probably the last seven or eight, as we kind of turned a corner and really began to, broadcast that Sun & Fun had a mission broader than just taking care of the many pilots and friends that come in to enjoy the show for what it is. The fact that we've always supported education and always been part of the STEM education learning process is something that we brought to the forefront now with our Aerospace Center for Excellence. So, probably the biggest challenge over the last several years, prior to COVID, was simply making that connection, getting people to realize that not only, were they going to have a great time when they came to our spring break for pilots, which that hasn't changed, but, when they did come and do that, then they were supporting, the mission that our Aerospace Center for Excellence has right here on the Sun & Fun campus, and that's to engage, educate, and accelerate the next generation of aerospace professionals. So whether they realize it or not, they just came in and had a good time, when they came in and invested with us, spent time with us, spent money with us, then the proceeds went towards, furthering that cause. And we're very proud of the results of that now, having pilot scholarship programs, post-secondary education scholarships, A&P scholarships, a lot of things that really support the aerospace industry at large.
Yeah, no doubt, investing into the kids, as you said, through STEM, aerospace is really the future of our economy.
So much evidence of that when you see, even with the COVID shutdown, one of the questions we would get was like, "Wow, so." With all the planes grounded right now, what does that do to your need for pilots? There was such a huge pilot shortage; everybody's making a big deal out of it. Now all the airplanes are grounded. So now what? Well, the answer is it's worse. You've got the airlines, because of COVID, were forced to create early retirement programs. Unfortunately, it wasn't nearly as bad as some of the things that went on during the recession, but. They had quite a lot of furloughed individuals, people that, had to go on, and some of them had to find other jobs and whatnot. And all of a sudden that curve has steepened dramatically as far as the need goes. People are not going to stop flying. And now all of a sudden you've got this year's worth of limbo when it comes to the aviation industry, aerospace industry. And there's going to be a need to fill that gap, even more so than there has been. So the answer to what do you do is you speed up.
No doubt.
You keep those programs going. And we were very, very fortunate to be able to keep our scholarships, in place and to keep our next evolution of our campus. Even we had a large 22,000 square foot expansion of our Florida Air Museum was started construction just before COVID hit, and we were able to continue that, and it should be ready to go during the fly-in this year.
I saw that in 2019 that the event saw north of 225,000 attendees, and then with volunteers and staff and media and so on and so forth, north of 230,000 people. I mean, that's just an outstanding number. With COVID-19 issues, are you thinking that the number is going to go up, or is it going to go down?
You know, it's really hard to say. It's so weird right now. We had our holiday flying festival and car show back in December, and one of the things was just, number one, the South really needed an air show. And a good friend of ours, B. Lilly Productions, held a Lockheed Martin Air and Space Expo over in Sanford in October. And it was a very good success. And we had already planned to have our holiday flying festival and car show. So it was great to see that people came out to that event over, our neighbors nearby. And then, of course, when we, announced our show, we were, kind of curious. It was definitely designed to be a test bed. What will our local constituents think of this? Will they come? Will people fly into it? And, what will they do when they get here? How will they behave? What sort of COVID tolerances are they going to exhibit? So in addition to just having a really fun show and having something to, get people out of the house for, after being, squirreled away for so long, we had a lot of measuring that we wanted to do. And by all accounts, it was a huge success. We had, 7,500 plus people come out. We had over 450 aircraft that came in. They camped, they drove in RVs. They, we had so many different ways that people came to enjoy the outdoors. And then once they were here, social distancing is obviously a big part of everyone's planning these days. And it was fun to see how everyone just sort of managed it on their own. We had very little oversight when it came to the, the policies on site. And we expect that now going into April. So given that, just here in December, things were beginning to peak again. We saw a lot of, around Thanksgiving, we started to see some numbers going up and as far as COVID cases. But at the same time, we had a very good turnout. In fact, it's probably good that we were fogged in on Saturday morning of that event in December, because if they hadn't been, I'm not sure we could have parked all the airplanes. So now we're very optimistic that we'll see a repeat performance of that, given also we're seeing the, the numbers organically are starting to come down somewhat. And I think a lot of that's due to the fact that, the holidays and people's gathering times have come and gone. And now there's any cases that resulted from that are starting to go down. And then, of course, you've got the vaccine that I'm not sure we've seen the results of that yet. I think just the organic cases are coming down because people aren't gathering like they were. And then now you're going to layer the vaccine on top of that. So I feel like we're going to probably see a really good turnout. A lot of the folks in the this area, for example, there's some major festivals. The Gasparilla Pirate Festival is one. The our Lakeland Pig Fest is another that have postponed their events from January. The Gasparilla Pirate Festival, that's a 500,000 people invade Tampa and celebrate the pirate Gaspar, and it's a huge festival, and they moved that to the end of April. And our Lakeland Pig Fest is a competition barbecue, which is another one that's very well attended, so, probably 50, 60,000 people. And they also moved it to the beginning of May. So, and there are several other events. There's a lot of people that spend a lot of time, have a lot of lawyers that think it's a good idea that April's a good time to start doing these shows. So we're fortunate that we're already scheduled for that time frame anyway. So we think it's going to be pretty good.
Yeah, I have to say I was delighted to see the creation of a COVID-19 review committee with staff, FEMA folks and volunteers and medical personnel as part of the committee. How is the process of internal education and information dissemination been going?
Well, we have that network, fortunately, and it's been developed, over the last 47 years. So as far as internally, we have a network of volunteer chairmen who occupy leadership roles in, oh my gosh, I've lost count, probably 140 plus different areas of this event. So with 3,500 plus volunteers running around, you've got to have some leadership in place. And again, a lot of that, some of these folks have been here since the very beginning, so it's a very good and well-established network of communication that we have with those people. So as this committee has gone through and taken best practices from a lot of different places, you know, we're talking, of course, the CDC, FEMA has their response, you know, protocols that we've been able to tap into. We, of course, have our neighbors here at the larger theme parks, observing how they handle large crowds. And, of course, our city guidance, city ordinances, things that we're required to do based on, you know, local ordinance and what have you. You know, all of that information has been, you know, condensed into that committee. They have kind of swirled it around and come up with something that is specific to what we do, and then has begun disseminating that, as you saw in the policy statement there, that dissemination has gone through those volunteer ranks. And, of course, that goes out to each of those areas to, at minimum, meet the standards that we have. One of the things, too, is that we don't want anybody really pioneering anything. We want to make sure we're very standardized all across the event. And we had our first volunteer chairman's meeting this past Saturday, where we had, you know, about 150 of those chairmen come in and meet with us and, of course, go through some of the standard things that we do anyway. But naturally, COVID was a big topic, and that's how we manage it.
Yeah, it sounds like your COVID-19 plans during the event facilitates a fluid response, allowing for change on the fly. I thought that was a super goal to protecting people. And I guess it's a little early for that planning process to start.
Well, you know, it's such a fluid environment. You know, as things continue to develop, you don't want to lock yourself down into something that might not be the best situation for that moment in time 2 months from now, 2.5 months from now. So, you know, trying to get something as a baseline to where essentially the message is we want people, regardless of their tolerance, to know that it's going to be a safe environment, that we are being responsible about, you know, the potential gathering of a large, you know, large number of people. But at the same time, we're not trying to, you know, force anything on anyone. The standard statement is if someone's not comfortable, you know, that their risk tolerance hasn't quite gotten there yet to be out in a crowd, we would encourage them to look at all the different things we do online, and hopefully we'll see them next year. Because, you know, sure, we don't want anyone to feel uncomfortable at all, or to feel like, you know, this is something they, you know, when they came into, they didn't know what to expect. So that's really what we want to do, is make sure those expectations are managed, that people know that, you know, they're not going to walk up and be surprised by what we're, you know, asking them and or not asking them to do.
Sure.
And that page on our website is a living document. It'll be something that'll continue to be updated as we move closer and closer to the event.
And I know it is a moving environment, and certainly we're many months out before the event. Not to get political by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm just kind of curious around, you know, up here in Canada, here in Toronto, we had these, you know, in the media, these pesky anti-maskers. And as you said, that according to the COVID-19 guidelines for the state and Sun and Fun, you know, masks are, shall we say, mandatory. If there are folks that just choose not to be part of the guidelines, are you guys going to ask them to leave?
Well, the way we've structured that is that in Florida, the way it's currently stated, if you're not able to socially distance in a given environment, and we'll start with outdoors, then, you know, the masks are going to, and what we're doing, masks are going to be required in those areas. So queues where you've got people lined up for tickets or lined up for food or what have you. You know, if there's a place where you're just simply not able to, or it looks like the dynamic of the crowd is such that social distancing is not going to be possible or practical, then the masks are going to be required. And we'll have agents moving through through the crowd. They're volunteers that'll be, you know, reminding people passively to mask up. There'll be signs, you know, people walking literally that have signs reminding people that that's in place. And we got this from a couple of locations that some of our team members actually went to and observed that, you know, people, rather than you know, stealthily moving around the crowd and surprising someone who's not wearing a mask, you know, that doesn't feel real good. Having that passive activity, you know, kind of an oxymoron, but passive activity of maneuvering a live person around with a reminder signage that says that it is expected, is the first layer of expectation management, to where people, when they see that, that we hope that they'll mask up. Out in the area, out in the wide open, I hope people will take a break from the mask where they can, because that's one of the reasons we think that our event's going to be very popular with folks, is they can get away and very responsibly be, 25, 30, 100 feet from the next person, just because we've got almost 1,100 acres for them to spread out on at any given time. Now, inside buildings, the masks are going to be required. And as far as, it's very difficult for a private entity that's not, a law enforcement entity or any sort of enforcement entity at all, to actually enforce, making someone wear a mask. We'll make the request, we'll ask them to mask up, and then if for some reason someone decides that's not what they want to do, then we'll escalate that through the proper, local channels, as any business might. So if you're downtown Lakeland or somewhere and there's not a, and someone's not complying with the local city ordinance, then it's up to the individual that sees it to report that and let law enforcement take over from there. Because, again, we don't pay our volunteers enough to be that confrontational, let's put it that way. So,
I see that, in the United States, today's vaccination numbers puts the U.S. at 12.32% of the total population. Sadly, I have to report that Canada's at 2.76%. Any thoughts around organizing on-site pop-up vaccinations, essentially facilitating vaccine tourism?
It's been discussed. Honestly, we haven't gotten very far with it. The normal side of what we do has obviously consumed a slightly reduced staff and volunteer population. So adding something new like that is a little bit more of a significant undertaking than it might be in other years. It's a great idea. It's something we'd love to explore. At this time, we don't have anything definitive, although we are trying to, we have reached out to a couple of medical partners to see if they might be able to facilitate that for us. So it really comes down to, where are we in the who can, who can't type of thing. Right now we're still restricted to 65 and older, or, frontline and medical healthcare workers and people of that nature are the ones that are authorized to receive the vaccination thus far. We don't know where that's going to be 2 months from now. So if it's open season at that point, then it would make a lot of sense to do it. If it's not, then it would be very difficult to get into the business of managing who's eligible and who isn't. So we've got some folks within that COVID response team that are exploring that as an idea right now, but we really haven't gotten very far.
Oh, that's awesome. I love to see that you guys are thinking outside of the proverbial box, if you will. So I was doing a little research, and certainly one of the problems we face up here in Canada as it relates to COVID-19 is like the information is changing all the time in terms of quarantine and all that kind of stuff. And I was on the Florida's state health's website, and really their message for domestic travelers in Florida is no restrictions. You don't have to quarantine or any of that stuff, but a little challenging to figure out what's the state of the nation for Canadians coming down. Do they have to quarantine for 14 days when they show up?
Well, fortunately, we have U.S. Customs that can take care of that situation for general aviation pilots. So whatever the national, domestic, and international policies are for travel, those will obviously have to be adhered to for anyone coming from outside the country to enter the country. So we're going to count on that having been done. And if they arrive here at the field, we're just going to welcome those that show up. We don't have any mechanisms in place to, we're going to have to assume if they got themselves into the country, then they meet the qualifications to be here.
Perfect. So, I see that the Blue Angels are back for 2021. They're one of my favorites. They must be one of the highlights for the show, but I was curious as to who's your favorite.
Oh man, that's a loaded question. I think my favorite one is the one that's in front of me at the time, because I just love them all. I do enjoy the Blue Angels. I've had kind of a rare look at many different teams over the last 20 years of my career in the business, and there's each team has got its own personality, even among just that incredible professionalism that the Navy and the Marine Corps put on when the Blue Angels come to town. They've got such a presence, you know. And, but then at the same time, you know, if I have to, any of the armed services that have their demonstration teams have got that same level of execution and professionalism. And of course, then there's just the flat out skill that you're watching that leaves your jaw on the floor. You know, it's just amazing to see. So I don't know if I could really pick a favorite one. I do enjoy the Blues tremendously. I've known quite a number of their team members over the years, and we've remained, you know, friends to this day. So it's a good relationship. Really enjoy it. We're looking forward. Obviously, we're already scheduled to have the Thunderbirds back in 2022.
Wow.
And the neat thing is that we'll be celebrating the 75th anniversary of the Blue Angels here this year, and the 50th anniversary of the Thunderbirds next year. So we get to be the kind of the headliner for some of the most significant events in those programs' history. We get to help them celebrate and be part of some, pretty significant unveilings. Like this year, we'll be the first public venue that people get to see the new Super Hornets as their platform for the Blue Angels. And of course, the return of Fat Albert. Their C-130 Hercules has not performed here in two different times they've been here. The last two times Fat Albert has not had a performance. The first year, the aircraft was taken out of service right after it arrived. And then the second year, it didn't arrive at all. So, it's fun. They've got a brand, you know, new to them. They picked up a, C-130, Juliet model out of, England. It was reassigned. And then they got a brand new shiny paint job on it. It'd be the first time Fat Albert's actually performed in about a year and a half, I think, maybe a little longer. Well, actually 2.5 years because we skipped last year. So about 2.5 years since we've seen Albert do a demo. So again, my favorites are, I think that the air show family at large, whoever's flying in the air at the time, I think is my favorite, but it's nice to have all these folks come see us.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you. I mean, it's such eye candy. You know, with that said, I do enjoy watching the Phillips Aerostars folks are in the little tiny extra aerobatica aircraft and 3 feet of separation during precision aerobatics. Completely amazing.
Great guys. Yep. They'll be returning this year. They have their flight slot. They'll be here earlier in the week, Tuesday and Wednesday, I believe they'll be flying. And I've already spoken to them. And, of course, Phillips 66 is a great sponsor, not only of them, but our show as well. So it's nice to have them.
So, Greg, any final thoughts for the Plane Talk audience?
Well, we hope, you know, as many of your audience as possible can come see us. If not, we're about to unveil a Sun and Fun Daily Digital product. It's going to be a website, really a media clearinghouse for not only our own content, but content that's presented to us for distribution on that site. So it's going to be a great place to go find editorial content, our press releases, other people's press releases about us, links to our social media channels, and whatnot. Look for a press release coming out sometime in the next week or so to unveil that, but it'll be a great place for people to not only look at, you know, written content, but also video content. We will have our live air show TV will be back for this year. They've become a mainstay here at Sun and Fun, and they'll be broadcasting our air show in a reimagined way on Friday, actually maybe Thursday. We're looking at a Thursday kind of a pre-show event. But certainly Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, you'll be able to tune in and catch a lot of action live. And the way the air show is being produced is a lot more like a television show than it has been in the past. So there'll be a lot of interview and some special content all scattered out in between the performances that should make it pretty exciting. People on site will be able to see that as well. We're going to live stream it straight to their devices, so they'll be able to watch that content if they're here. And if they're not here, we wish they were. They'll get a little taste of why they should be here and hopefully coming next year.
No, absolutely, no doubt. Thank you so much for your time, Greg. Much appreciated.
All right, you bet.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Plane Talk. If you have any ideas for a future Plane Talk episode, please go to the Contact Us page at planetalk.ca and send in your idea. Don't forget to like us at planetalk.ca, our Facebook and LinkedIn pages, and this podcast. And never stop living the dream.